It's hard to imagine how very tiny creatures can construct homes that are visible from space, but that's exactly what reef-building baby corals actually do. They use a coral toolkit, if you will, to transform from floating larvae to stay-at-home reef construction experts. Would you believe biomineralization? Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology researcher and director Dr. Ruth Gates is with us this morning to explain how it happens. Welcome, Ruth.
Thanks very much, Bill. I'm delighted to be here.
All right. For those of us not too familiar with biomineralization, this is here's a little critter, and it's got lots of other little critters living with it, inside it.
It does.
Symbiotes?
Yes. So corals are really, they're magnificent organisms. They have managed to harness the energy or the function of other creatures. And so corals have these tiny, tiny little plants living inside of themselves. And they live in this really mutualistic and very beautiful relationship where they communicate with one another. The plants do what all plants do. They use sunlight energy to fix carbon dioxide and water into a small food that it then gives to the animal. And so essentially corals have a food factory living inside of themselves. And this relationship is really what underpins coral reefs globally, these incredible structures that really harbor enormous amounts of biodiversity that we use. Coral reefs are critically important to man. So this relationship is the center of the universe for a coral, and frankly, it's what enables the coral to start to lay down the hard structure or their skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's these skeletons that create the structures that are reefs.
Now, and these are essentially calcium carbonate, right?
Exactly. So bone, just like we have bone inside of us that gives us structure, corals have bones inside of themselves that gives them structure and allows them to create three-dimensional structure.
But it's the process which is sort of mysterious. Now, essentially, mommy and daddy coral do what all mommy and daddy coral do, and the little baby corals have essentially one-celled zygotes, fertilized egg and sperm. And then they sort of grow to a certain thing, and the parents go, good luck to you, go find a home, now get out of here, you're on your own. And they're swimming around freely looking for a home, but somehow they stop wandering and want to settle down just like mom and dad. So the mechanism of settling down, that's the mystery you guys have uncovered?
That's right. So what we've been really looking at is what makes a coral go from swimming around. These baby corals are swimming around in the water column. They find a place that they think they want to live in for the rest of their life, because, of course, this decision is that decision. And at that point, things have to happen within their molecular machinery, mm-hmm, that stops them swimming and has them sit down to the bottom and then start to lay down, have the capacity to start to lay down calcium carbonate skeletons. And so what we've done is to, first of all, identify the alphabet of genes that are present and involved in that process, and then looked at the sequence or the dance between these different elements or genes as time goes by and as they develop from a free-swimming larva to a coral that's putting down skeleton.
Do they get sort of coralline real estate agents saying, here's a great location? What the signal comes up from someplace?
That's right. The signal to sit down comes from a red sort of creeping thing on the bottom that we call a crustose coralline algae. And they give off a chemistry or a chemical, a pheromone, that attracts these tiny little larvae. And they sniff this pheromone out.
Sort
they
of a red it. Algae district.
Exactly. That's exactly right, Bill. You've got it. So they sniff
toot, toot.
The
beep, beep. Sorry.
And so they sit down and they become a small calcifying object that then can grow into a whole colony. Because remember, corals start as one tiny little polyp, mm-hmm, which is essentially just a ring of tentacles with a mouth and
right.
a skeleton underneath them. And then they are clonal, so they reproduce by adding independent units that are connected to each other that are all genetically identical to create an individual colony.
Now
and each of these colonies grows into a reef.
If I may, the algae within, is it contributing to the biomechanism by which the calcium phosphate can be made?
Absolutely. It's a calcium carbonate.
And carbonate,
sorry. Yes, the carbonate and the symbiosis between the algae and the animal actually accelerates the rate at which that process happens, and in ways that we're just beginning to understand, frankly.
And essentially the calcium is just ions free-floating in the seawater?
That's right. And they're actually in the seawater. They're moved through the tissues of the coral to mm-hmm. where the site of calcification is, which is inside the tissue. So essentially you have the skeleton, a layer or veneer of tissues that stretches over the skeleton, and these symbionts or algae that are dark brown that give the coral their characteristic coloration mm-hmm. and can be seen really through the transparent tissues of the coral.
Exoskeleton, sort of exoendo, they keep migrating?
It's definitely underneath the tissue. So it's really, you know, I suppose you'd call it an endoskeleton, but really it is something that grows on the substrate. The animal tissue is over it all the time in a thin veneer.
And yet this thin veneer is very thin in terms of delicacy because of changes in the environment.
That's right. And so, you know, the corals and reefs have been in the news a lot recently with the global bleaching that is going on. And it is, you know, this is really a reflection of the breakdown of the symbiosis that we've just been discussing, that for some reason these warmer than normal temperatures impair the ability of these tiny plant cells inside the animal to communicate with their animal. And the animal sees them now as foe and gets rid of them. And so what was originally dark turns white, and that reflects the loss of these tiny plant cells.
Is it possible with further research into how it's done to possibly modify it genetically to enable it to cope with the warmer temperatures?
You know, there's a lot of really interesting work going on. You know, we know that there are some types of plants or tiny plants that are strains that are actually more thermally tolerant than others. And so we're looking at whether or not you can potentially introduce the most thermally tolerant into all corals, give them a leg up to get through these very stressful warming times. Because let's face it, our future ocean is going to be warmer and more acidic, the double whammy of climate change.
Well, I hope that research manages to get these little critters to keep building. Thank you so much for being with us this morning, Ruth. I wish we could talk longer, but unfortunately my mouth is running out of speech.
Thank you very much, Bill. It was a pleasure.
Dr. Ruth Gates is the director of and researcher at the Hawaii Institute for Marine Biology, University of Hawaii, Manoa, Mokualoa, Coconut Island. She's the elected president of the International Society for Reef Studies. Find out more on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation.